Don't panic. For the next hour, let Steve and Paul talk you down from that ledge, right here on RFI. They're the host who won't cop out when there's panic all about.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Podcast. My name's Steve Benson. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Hey, how you doing?
Don't you forget, nothing you're about to hear is true. And that sweet, sweet butter, I think, is going to be a thing. Because
yeah.
I introduced Hollywood. That intro, man. I listen to it sometimes when I can't go to sleep. Just sit there and listen to his sweet, smooth voice.
Well, how do you think I feel? I got like 5 of them, so.
He's going to stop.
I got like 10 minutes of him, so I just let it play.
He's going to stop doing that for us. He's like, dude.
No, please.
It's weird.
It's like, can you recite this? And you hand him like something from like, you know, 50 Shades of Grey or something.
Yeah, I'll hand the phone to my wife. I'll be like, okay, Saturday night, my wife and I are... We got the music playing. We got some candles lit. I'm going to hand the phone to her. You just start talking, all right?
You are guaranteed.
Do not, under any circumstance, no matter what you hear on the other end, do not stop talking.
That's right. Like full 45, it works every time.
Unless I say the safe word and then call 911.
911 is the safe word.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we have a very special show today because, I almost forgot. Welcome, RFI listeners. Chopped Liver guys kind of brought us in here, and if you're a Chopped Liver fan, I don't know if we'll be playing any punk today, although I may tell you about my social distortion experience from last Friday and how my wife got absolutely pissed off at the crowd to the point that she was like, she could have fulfilled her own desire if she had just gotten pissed off enough to start running into people. She was really pissed that people like super tame. So I thought that was ridiculous. So anyway, you might get to hear a little bit of that. I'm sure you don't go to a Chopped Liver endorsed show, and she would probably not be pissed off. So anyway, welcome, and if you just can't stand listening to us, don't worry. In less than 54 minutes and 13 seconds, it's MP and Tolan with the Do It Indie Radio Hour right here on RFI. Very special show today. We have not our first guest, but what will hopefully be our first non-family member guest and successful guest. So we did an interview one time over Skype and it was awful. So we destroyed it.
Yeah.
On the cutting room floor.
This is our first three-way with a non-family member, which sounds even worse.
my dad would be so proud. Well, Steve, I'm glad you got experience with family members, but you know, now it's time. If you're going to have a three-way, it can't always be with a family member. Thanks, Dad. Hmm. All right. His name, so we're going to go ahead and bring him in now. We got him on the super secret celebrity hotline. His name is Andy Martello. He's a comedian. He's a juggler. I don't know. You consider Andy.
Yes,
welcome
sir.
To the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on. It's always nice to be had.
Oh, then you're going to fit right in.
Very good. Yes.
Do you consider yourself a comedian who juggles or a juggler who comedian?
I've always considered myself a comedian who happens to juggle because at one point when I was very young, first learning juggling and other performance skills, I had set my sights on becoming like the absolute greatest juggler in the world. And then I remember I was 16 years old and I'm watching the Johnny Carson show and this 10-year-old kid was on it and he was doing stuff that would take me another 20 years to learn, and he was the greatest juggler in the world. And I said, you know what, I think I'd much rather be the funniest juggler in the world. And so I could do a much longer act if I could stall and be funny. And you know, plus it also... It came in handy if my props got lost on an airplane trip somewhere or things like that. Well, then I could still be, you know, theoretically, I could still be funny without having to throw things into the air and make corny clown type jokes. So, everything I do is kind of based in comedy, and then you know, who knows? We hope for the best. If they don't laugh,
you can always pantomime the juggling. You know, if you like lose your stuff in an airplane, you can pretend you're juggling.
Exactly. Yeah. And, well, that's what. Then what I do is I just book myself on a lot of radio shows and podcasts as a juggler, and I'm just like, wait till you see this, and then I'm just like, oh my god, can you hear that? It's fantastic.
You just start up a few chainsaws and
yeah, exactly. And then every once in a while you make sure something hits the ground so they know you're not a god. You know, you want to make sure they think you're human. So oops, I dropped something. And, you know, you throw a sound effect of like a screaming cat in the background or a you know, crying baby, and they just figure you're also daring and edgy. But now, so who's this celebrity that's coming on the celebrity hotline? I can't wait to hear that guy. Who's this person?
Oh, his name is Kurt Lindemann. He's doing a show in Terre Haute, Indiana, coming up here. It's called the Rose Hallman Pike Kappa Alpha Homecoming.
Yes.
I believe he's bringing a red Sebring convertible and a tent.
What are the odds? the only difference would be is if it's the same red Sebring convertible he drove back in 93.
At this point, it's a classic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I see them all the time at the Barrett Jackson and the Meekum auctions. They usually go for about $13. It's fantastic. Yeah, they're and that's with the if the convertible top is still in good shape.
Factory paint job, you know.
So to let Paul in on the joke, so I first met Andy 48 years ago, I think. I'm only 46, so that's really something. It was one of the most memorable weddings I've ever been to. It was my friend Kurt and his lovely bride, Colette. And they, first of all, I was shocked that Kurt was able to land such a cool chick like Colette. But hey, there's no accounting for taste, right? I guess he's kind of like you and I, Paul and me. He's kind of like us in a way. He makes people laugh. And so when they're laughing, they can't really see what you look like. So
they squint and laugh so much, and then by the time they say yes or sleep with you, it is so too late. It is way too late.
That's right. My, you know, I wish the thing is, I couldn't get my wife to laugh until I slept with her, and then she wouldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, there you go. Well, what's the old joke? You know, on the honeymoon night. Guy takes off his pants, and the wife says, "Who do you expect to please with that?" And he goes, "Me, just me." That's all it is.
So Kurt is a guy I went to college with. We were fraternity brothers, and then some number of years after college, I swear to God, we talk about being our dads a lot on this show, and right now I'm like, I have no idea how long ago it was, so I'll just say 20 years.
Yeah,
and
that's so safe, but.
It was a memorable wedding because it was at a German restaurant in Batesville, Indiana.
Yes.
And it's like middle of nowhere, Indiana. I mean, you have to drive 40 minutes to get nowhere. And there's this great German restaurant, authentic food, authentic beer, authentic Oompa band. Kurt and Colette dress in, like, she's got a fabulous dress on. I don't know. Did Kurt wear his lederhosen? I don't think so.
For the sake of the argument, let's just say yes, because I think that Kurt wore this, would like to picture somebody in lederhosen.
Kurt wore these lederhosen, and Colette wore a dirndl, like, you know, with the boobs pushed up and hanging out. And
I'm glad you clarified that. I was going to have to Google it.
Yeah. Anyway, so Andy was the best man, and I remember there was this other guy, Lance, in college, who always introduced himself as a comedian. And I don't know if he's been doing comedy lately, but, you know, there were a lot of those guys back in the day. And most of them were like, they just liked the idea of being a comedian. But it seems to me, when I heard from Colette the other day that Andy's, you know, he's making the rounds on podcasts and would be a great interview, I thought, now there's somebody that did the work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he did. You just weren't in love with the idea. I mean, you've headlined in Las Vegas. You've done corporate stuff. You're known nationally. You've written a book. I mean, you're out there doing it, man.
You know, you make me feel a whole lot better about my career than I actually do. Thank you. I do. It sounds like I've done a lot more than I feel as though I've done.
he's good for that. he makes me feel good every here. Week. So.
Try to make people feel good about themselves.
I've been fortunate. I mean, I've been, I learned how to, the first time I was ever really on stage doing anything, I was 10 years old, in a high school musical production of Bye Bye Birdie, and they needed a 10-year-old kid to play Randolph McAfee. And I had to learn lines, and I had to learn dialogue for songs. I had to learn choreography. And I just remember thinking, this is the coolest damn thing in the world. And that same year, so we're talking 1980, that's when I learned how to juggle. I'd already learned a couple stupid magic tricks and other things like that. And by the time I was 15, I was doing shows, like little juggling shows, locally for schools and park districts and things like that. I'll never forget, it was my senior year. I think it was my senior year of high school. And my principal got a phone call from one of the area grade schools wanting to know how to get in touch with me to book me for a show. And he called me into the office and told me that Locust School just down the street is going to, they would love to have you do two shows. The problem is it's during the school week. And I said, oh, well, that's okay. I'm honored they asked. And he said, no, I'm going to write you a hall pass so you can go and perform these shows and get out of your classes. And I'm like, why on earth would you do that? And he said, you know, and it's funny. I never realized that my principal was actually a cool person until even 20 years later. Then it dawned on me, like, that's the coolest thing he ever could have done. And he told me point blank, it's like, you're clearly, this is what you want to do. You want to be an entertainer when you get out of here. So even if you don't go to college to do it or things like that, you need experience doing what you want to do. So as an educator, I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't write you a hall pass to miss a couple classes and go make some money. And I was like, that's cool. All right. So, you know, and then from then on, I mean, I've just, I got out of high school. I went to, of all places, Ringling Brothers Clown College to learn a whole lot of, learn plenty.
Doesn't really exist?
Oh, it used to. Yeah, it doesn't exist any longer. But yeah, it was around for 20 plus years. And look, entertaining, but dreadful on a resume. And I've just always just kind of performed everywhere. I mean, when I would get tired with doing, you know, I didn't do anywhere near as much of the hardcore road work as some of the comedians did, partially because if I got tired of trying to make $50 in gas money to go to Killeen, Texas for a night, I would be working some variety show or something else. I've been very fortunate. I can't say that I've always been working and never had to get an entertainer's day job, but for the majority of the last 30 years, it's how I've made the lion's share of my money. And these days, you know, I moved out to Las Vegas about 8 or 9 years ago. And since then, I had a headlining show, it was a comedy magic act. I was kind of like the pen of Penn and Teller in this particular act. I was the juggler and the funnier person, and the other guy was the one with lots of magical skill. But we had a headlining show, and then now I work as the announcer for the touring version of The Price is Right. The show is called The Price is Right Live, and it's quite literally a stage show version of what you see on television. You know, I'm the guy who says, come on down, and, you know, reads off all the prizes and all that fun stuff. We play, in fact, we were just in, we're going to be in Anderson, Indiana. It's either October or November, and we were in Indianapolis and all around that area. We're always playing to sold out shows, sometimes 2 to 3 thousand people per show. It's ridiculous.
Why don't you make Steve's day and like use like the come on down voice and tell him to come on down.
All right, here we go. Hang on. And Steve Vinson, yes, I always want to make sure I get the name right. It's one of those rare times I can ask the last name before reading it, because usually they just hand me the list, and I'm stuck with whatever is there. So it's like there's like 16 consonants in a row, and I just have to assume, you know, what the hell. So here we go. Steve Vinson, come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right Live. How's that?
I've always wanted to meet Drew Carey.
Oh, I have met. Drew's a very cool guy, and the person who does my job on the television show, the announcer, George Gray, he sometimes hosts our live show. And it's funny, when the two of us work together, it kind of becomes like dueling announcers. You know, we'll get on stage and we're both trying to compare.
Come on down. Yeah. No, you come on down. No, you come on down.
And it always culminates in us trying to figure out how we say, you know, who says a new car better than that. And the other, a new car. Oh, I always say a brand new car. Oh, wow, that's good. You know, it's like total geek moments there. But
you get a car. You get a car.
You get a car. But it's
like Oprah setting. Versus.
Yeah, Oprah versus the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Kurt's that wedding, Kurt and Colette's wedding, was a lot of fun because I had just moved out to Las Vegas. And our, at the time I was married, we moved out here because a freak storm destroyed our apartment building in Chicago. And so, and we were like, hey, this is a perfect time to move cross country, go someplace else. But we literally had no money. And when he called to ask me to do this, I was like, I would love to be your best man, but I mean, and I'm not saying this to be a jerk. I can't even afford, you know, a bus ticket to go to work, much less out there. And they ponied up the dough. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm outside on my porch. If you hear a large plane flying overhead, that's because there's a large plane flying overhead.
That explains that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But yeah, Kurt and Colette, they ended up paying for me and my wife April to fly out there and you know, do my best manly duties, which is funny because everyone who knows me well knows that the one surefire way to make sure I never talk to you again is to invite me to your wedding. Because I hate weddings. I didn't like being in my own wedding. I think they're stupid, pointless, waste of time and money. Yet this one was actually a lot of fun, and you know, it's the only time I will ever give a best man speech. And I was very happy to do it. That was a lot of fun. And yeah, it was a cool time. Good food. Man, the food was good. And lots of drinking.
I was thoroughly put to shame, though, because there was this beer stein holding contest.
Mm-hmm.
And on they had a little website where you could, like, message other guests or whatever. And I'd been doing some smack talk on this on this message board about their wedding because I was like, I'm the biggest motherfucker there. I know that. And I know I'm strong. So I'm just going to go in there. And I was like, here's what I was like. I was like in Rocky 3. Rocky 2. Which one was Clubber Lang? Mr. T was in Rocky 3, right?
Number 3. Clubber Lang was 3.
I was like Rocky 3 when he first fought Clubber, or maybe I was like Apollo Creed. Which one was it that didn't train because he figured, oh, I got this guy?
That was Apollo Creed.
It was Apollo.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like Apollo Creed. I'm like, I don't even need to train for this. I'll beat these skinny arm guys. I get there. I can't. So a full mug, a full stein of beer is way heavier than you think.
Oh, yeah.
And to be able to hold it straight out is ridiculously difficult. And I was only able to do it for like 25 seconds.
Yeah.
And I think my roommate from college, Greg Imony, like held it up for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, what the hell?
You know Greg, right? Paul?
Yeah.
I don't know if you do.
Yeah, I know Greg.
Andy?
I may have met him. Well, I saw him at the wedding, no doubt, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you saw him at the wedding. And if you ever went to Las Vegas with Kurt, you probably saw Greg. Did you ever go to Las Vegas with Kurt?
No, actually, he's well, one time, yes, I believe we did.
Mean,
yeah. Yes, we did.
I said Las Vegas, I meant New Orleans.
Oh, well, in that case, no.
You've been to one debaucherous, sinful town, you've been to them all.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think I had the best strategy for that particular contest, because I went into it knowing that, A, I just didn't want. I looked at it thinking, I can either be drinking and having a good time, or I can end up with a sore arm and shoulder tomorrow trying to hold up this, you know, 40-pound keg of beer with a handle. And so I picked, you know, they're like, you have to do it. You're the best man. You have to do this kind of, okay, great. I'll do it. So I grabbed the, waited for the absolute, you know, number 3, 2, 1, go. And I lifted it up and I just started drinking the beer and I put the mug down and said, bye.
Free beer.
Yeah. I was like, that's how you do that. I don't need no bragging rights. I just need another beer. So I was pretty happy with that.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, so the wedding, you'd moved to Las Vegas. Tell you what, we're going to take a little break here. Do you have time to stick around for a few minutes,
sure,
Andy?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when we come back, we'll talk about the King of Casinos, which I have a lot of questions about the King of Casinos.
Absolutely.
It's called King of Casinos, Willie Martello and the El Rey Club. We'll be right back.
win, you know. He wants to bury you. He wants to humiliate you. He wants to prove to the whole world that it was nothing but some kind of a freak the first time out.
Rocky, his whole life was a million to one shot, but he's about to show the world he's one in a million.
Why don't you stand up and fight this guy hard like you've done before? That was beautiful.
Rocky II, the story continues.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind marrying me very much.
I do.
Thanks.
The love continues.
You're the best thing ever come my crazy life.
Faster! Faster!
The courage.
The doctor said you shouldn't fight anymore.
He recommended I don't fight, and I recommend that I do.
The challenge.
I want all of America, I want the whole world to see me destroy this man after two short rounds.
But Rocky, do you think you have a chance this time against Apollo?
I don't know, he looks pretty mad.
The hope.
I never asked you to stop being a woman, you know. Please, don't ask me to stop being a man.
The tears.
He's going to get hurt because of you.
Well, if he goes blind, you walk away. I can't. I love him.
The joy.
He's really us. Adrian, I can't believe you've done this.
The pain.
Don't worry about nothing. You just sleep as long as you want, okay? And I'm going to be here when you wake up.
The struggles.
You'll go back to being a two-bit nut.
The dreams.
I think we ought to knock his block off.
Absolutely.
15 rounds for the heavyweight championship of the world.
You think you're going to see a real great battle in every sense of the word?
That's what this fight is going to be. It's going to be a war.
You're going down, man. You're going down.
The most electrifying rematch in motion picture history. Rocky II, starring Sylvester Stallone, Talia Shire, Burt Young, Carl Weathers, and Burgess Meredith. Rocky II, the story continues.
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show with Paul Schultz, Steve Benson, and today we have Andy Martello. Welcome back, Andy.
Thank you so much, and while you were gone, I decided not to panic, so you really did help. Thank you. It's very good. I didn't panic.
My God, if we could change one life.
Yeah. The life you saved was actually my own. So thank you so much.
I can't.
Let me say something about that. Let me say something about that. If we change one life, it was all worth it. I think that's bullshit. Every time somebody says it, it's like, okay, Mr. President, this new program, the $25 billion program for promoting safety belt usage in rural Kentucky, east of the Smoky Mountains. Do you think that $25 billion, is that the best use of the national resources? Well, let me say, I think if we could save one life, it was worth it. I'm like, what the fuck? $25 billion for one life? Are you kidding me?
Especially if it's somebody in eastern Kentucky. Really? Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure our money could be spent elsewhere.
I mean, if it was on one of the coasts, you know.
Those are the same people. The people that say that are the same people that say it was an honor just to be nominated.
Right. Well, there's plenty of What's a good way of putting it? There are plenty of non-truthful, praiseworthy things you can say about just about anything. You know, an honor to be nominated. Your penis isn't small. There's tons of things that people can say that sound like, no, it's fine. When you know in the back of their head, they're like, ugh, all right, yeah.
It's in the same category of, you know, we'll be praying for you, or you're in our prayers.
Sorry for
you. You get to seem like you're doing something without actually doing anything.
Oh yeah, I call that the hand job principle. I've actually I remember I dumped a girl one time because we'd been going out a while and she offered to give me a hand job. And she's like, what do you mean? What? I said, no, you may as well just get out now. And she's like, why? And I said, that is the definition of the very least you can do. I am not interested in the very least you can do by any stretch of the imagination. And that's exactly it. It's a nice thought. I mean, yes, if somebody actually takes time out of their day to pray for me, that's very nice and probably misguided on their part, that it will be their ruination for doing so. But it's nice that they're thinking of me. But at the end of the day, usually people are just saying that because they have nothing else to say. They don't know what else they can say, you know, and it's just.
Right. I got no problem with somebody praying for me. I'm all about, you know, positive energy and all that bullshit. If somebody says I have an example of this. I have a Facebook friend who she's always saying she'll pray for people and stuff, but she also goes out and actually does work.
Right.
Like she will do stuff for the homeless. She'll, if you need something, she'll be there like with whatever you need. She actually goes out and makes a difference. And then she'll say, I'll pray for you. So I'm like, that's cool. You know, at least you back it up. You're not just all talk, right? And then there are the people who never do anything for anybody, but they're, I'll pray for you.
Oh,
fuck
sure.
You.
I get into this with a lot of friends, whenever they're sharing some Facebook meme to raise awareness about, you name the cause. It could be everything from, let's cure this to these people should be allowed to marry that. It doesn't really matter. And I always tell them, once again, this is the very least you can do. If you'd like to actually do something, there are channels you can go through that don't cost, it costs nothing to call a congressman or a senator. It costs 50 cents to mail a letter to anywhere or email for free. At least do that. Don't just like, I changed my Facebook profile picture. That means I helped. No, you didn't. You absolutely didn't do anything. And I get yelled at all the time. When did you become the Facebook police? I'm not. I'm just saying, quite honestly, we don't need to raise awareness for breast cancer. We're all aware of it. We might need to raise money for research. How's that? donate $5. Five whole dollars is worth so much more than changing your Facebook profile picture pink for a week. It's just.
I hate when that happens. When they did this thing here recently with the rainbow, it was like, I was posting stuff on people's pages, and I'm like, shit, that's the wrong person. Because they all look alike when they're red, with those neon colors. I'm like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to yell at you, Grandma. It's like,
oh, damn it, I got it all wrong. But yeah, I'm just not a big. And bear in mind, I know what everyone has their own levels of hypocrisy in the world, and I know exactly what type of hypocrite I am. I am the type of hypocrite that will point out when you're doing nothing, knowing I too am doing nothing. I mean, I am fine, but that,
well, but at least you know you're doing nothing.
Well, it's self-aware.
You don't claim to be doing something.
Yeah, so. Exactly. When it's something that matters to me, I am happy to do it. I'm happy to do something about it. And if I invite somebody to do it and they don't do it, I don't really get mad at them. But oh my God, I will spend all the time I could be spending, trying to make a difference in the world for that one person so it's all worth it. I will spend all the time calling out other people for going, seriously, do you really give a damn about that dead lion? I don't think so. It's not that big a deal. Move on.
So it was you, Colette, was yelling at, calling the outrage.
She was so mad. She was so mad. Yeah, she was talking to me. She's always mad at me for something. She'll never forgive me for actually showing up to the wedding. That's the real She's nice. I was hoping you wouldn't make it.
When he said I was broke, I was like, yes.
That's right. No. Yes. Okay. Well, I love her pieces, though. She's a good-hearted person who actually does something. So I don't usually call her out, but
she's a good-hearted woman in love with a good time and man. Actually, I don't know if you noticed that. Anyway,
interesting. So they are an interesting anomaly, those two. The fact they're still
together.
Our
podcast can be as long as we want, but Radio Free Indy only gives us an hour. So I want to get some talk about the book in. So you go from comedian, juggler, comedian who juggles, juggler who comedians, get some, get a headline act and some magic and stuff. And now you've written a book, King of Casinos, Willie Martello, and the El Rey Club. So what gave you the idea to write this book?
Well, I've always been a writer. I mean, I've been writing stuff since I was a little kid, and as I got older, I got things in internet magazines and here and there, but I never really did much with it outside of that. Somewhere around 2005, when I was still living in Chicago and vacationing here in Vegas, I was at a museum with my wife at the time, and walked right past this really cool old photograph of this rundown shack of a casino out in a town called Searchlight, Nevada, which is about 60 miles away from Las Vegas. And it just had a sticker on it that said Willie Martello's Casino and Brothel on the way to Laughlin. And now, by the time I'm looking at this picture, now I can't not look at anything else. I mean, I can't look at anything else. I can't not stare at this picture because my last name isn't common. It's not like Smith or Jones. It's you know, there's maybe 600 or 700 Martello families in the world, as far as I know. And then, of course, I see the word brothel, and I'm like, well, shit, there you go. I could have inherited the family business, for God's sake. This could be sweet. I just promised myself when I got home from that vacation, I would do a little bit of research, see if I could find out. There's only a few things I wanted. I wanted to find out if the place was still open, find out if this guy Willie Martello is still alive, and find out, you know, can I get a poker chip or a collectible, something to throw on my wall, you know? And what I wasn't expecting is the, you know, I put like findings on my web blog and people thought it was a cool story. And soon I was getting emails and phone calls from people who knew the guy or worked with him or were family members of him. Like, well, did you know that he built the first swimming pool in this town? Did you know he brought $5 million a year into this little town, drawing attention away from Vegas? Did you know this? No, I didn't. I'd write some stuff down. Oh, my God. Well, that's fascinating. And we get a little down the road. Oh, sure. Now a plane's coming, so you're going to miss the really good stuff. What I should do is pretend like you can't, like I'm saying something great, and then as soon as the plane goes away, and then I'll go, and then he killed her with his bare hands, you know, or something like that.
The new sheriff is the...
Right. So,
or what, from the Cheech and Chong, it would be the Mr. Robinson. Anybody could have killed Mr. Robinson. Mr. Robinson only have one killer. And that killer name is...
Ladies and gentlemen, snack bar man open not 15 minutes after it is closed for the evening. Thank you.
And now a preview of our coming attraction.
So Andy, were you related to Willie?
Well, now there's the funny thing. I found out very early on. Now, bear in mind, this book, we're talking 8 years of research. Ended up, you know, 8 years of phone calls, interviews, it became an obsession, you know, collecting stuff, finding, the place was only open for 15 years, and I have somehow amassed a collection of things, up to and including a billboard from the place that's sitting in my garage, a 5-foot by 12-foot billboard for a casino that I can't even visit. But I learned early on whether or not I was or wasn't related to him. And when I was working on it, decided I was going to make a book out of this thing. I said, you know, I'm going to make that a cool through line in the whole book because it's going to be a question that's on everyone's mind. And when the book first came out, if somebody asked me, are you related? I would tell them, wow, there's a whole chapter about it in the book. You're just going to have to read the book. You know, be so authorly and cool and, you know, smile and a wink. Now when people ask, I'm very happy to tell them up front, no, we're not related, not at all. It's a strange, freakish, dumb coincidence.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we ruined it.
Well, I was going to buy the book, but I don't have to buy it.
Forget it. Now.
How it ends.
Hell yeah, you don't have to read nothing. But the reason I don't mind telling them up front is because I learned maybe 6 months into it that we're not at all related to it, and I still stuck with this for 8 years.
That's impressive that you did, that you actually stuck with it, you know, finding that out. That's pretty cool.
This guy should be famous. He should be as famous as a Steve Wynn or a Howard Hughes, because things he was doing at his casino 60 miles away from Vegas in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they didn't even start trying in Las Vegas until the 80s or 90s. I mean, he was a visionary guy and a crazy maverick. He's one of those weird tall tale kind of Paul Bunyan-like characters that the more stories I was hearing about this guy, I'm like, no, there's no way. He couldn't have done all that. He didn't heal the sick and raise the dead. Come on. But every story I was getting, they were all true, and I was finding people who could back them up, and eyewitnesses, and this, that, and the other. And I said, yeah, God, why don't people know about him? Because all anybody knew, I mean, he was mentioned in one of Senator Harry Reid's books as being this pimp from California, because there was a brothel at the place for a few years, and that's all he was known for. And I'm like, how is it possible this guy did all these things and somehow the only mention of him is like a little blip in one book about how he's a pimp? Like, this is crazy. And so I just kind of made it a mission to get this story out and tell people, because people love Las Vegas stories, especially from that golden era of Vegas. And to find out there's a guy who was, you know, bringing $5 million a year into a town of no bigger than 50 people, and upsetting the Vegas mob by drawing so much business away from Las Vegas, sleeping with mobsters' wives, banging Hollywood celebrities, all these crazy things. It's like this is somebody everyone should know about. And so that's why, even knowing I'm not related to him at all, everything I learned about the guy was just that much funnier, that much more fascinating. And if you like celebrity, you know, I tell people it's got a little something for everybody. It's not a local history book by any stretch, because it's got you know, vintage Vegas, it's got celebrity stories, a little bit of mobsters, it's got prostitution, gambling,
it's
and horror
for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Especially
prostitution, gambling, drinking,
stuff, all the good stuff.
And, I'll tell you what, man, you've piqued my interest. As a non-professional interviewer, I haven't read the book, but now you've convinced me I ought to go out and get it. How do we learn more about Andy Martello? How do we learn more about the book?
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about me in general, you go to andymartello.com. And that'll have info about my book as well. But if you go to Amazon.com and you can just pick up a copy there, just type in my name or type in The King of Casinos, it'll pop up. It's a very, you know, I would love to say it's a bestseller. It's not, but it's definitely a well-read and well-reviewed book. I've got about...
I'm betting it'll be the best-selling book recommended by the Don't Panic radio show.
Clearly. Yeah, I tell you what, I can almost hear my sales crashing right now. It's fantastic.
we're bringing down the Amazon servers.
But, it's at the point, this isn't even putting the cart before the horse. I have neither a cart or a horse. That's how early the stages are of this, but it could happen. I mean, that would be a really, really great thing.
Just so you know, Steve and I both will happily be in the movie. So if you can work that in.
Work that. I'll make sure we can do something.
I'll play a corpse or a prostitute. I'm good.
We'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, right? Tell you what. Can you play a dead prostitute? That's the better.
I do quite often, actually.
Excellent.
I was married for 12
Amazon
years.
I love it. But Amazon has that, plus my new book that came out earlier this year. It's oddly enough a book of primarily romantic poetry, which is complete opposite of what I've been writing. So it's even...
What's that one called?
That one's called Pretty Words, Nothing More. Huh. And that's actually a pretty fun little project. And if things work out, I'll have another couple books out in the next few years, but we'll see what's going on. But definitely get King of Casinos. It's one of my...
We'll go ahead and put a link to both of those.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I would kill for some sort of scandalous viral story about, you know, people so offended by something they read in my book that they're setting it on fire in the streets. That would be great.
That's how we open this podcast. We badmouth some large corporations, and they've got to sue us.
You hope that they sue you, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to refuse to make a gay cake at some point.
I love it.
Hopefully get sued over that.
I love it. That could work out great. But
hey, are you gay? Because if you are, we could refuse to air this interview real quick.
You know,
and then you.
I'm not gay, but I'm willing to learn. If that'll help.
Hey.
Yeah, sure. What the hell? I don't care.
That's dedication, right?
That would be my book.
No, I am not.
That is the title of your book, isn't it?
That is, yeah, that's going to be my next book. No, I think my next book is going to be called "I'm Not Gay," but the guy who's sleeping with me totally is. But
oh, that's, man. It's a well, I tell you what,
strange little world.
We've got some other business to take care of. What any final thoughts, Andy?
Final thoughts. Oh gosh, see, I work with Jerry Springer frequently, and that's his thing—the final thought. But let me see if I can come up
with
something.
Work with Jerry Springer? Hold on, we got another podcast to record.
Oh, sure,
you work with Jerry Springer?
Oh, frequently, yeah. What? He frequently hosts our show, the Price is Right show.
Oh, damn! So now that you know a lot about the Bravo business, have you advised him not to write a check for a hooker?
No, I have not done that. Partially because he's the one who wants to turn it into a movie. So I want him to write as many checks as he wants.
I just want to, can I confirm real quick? This isn't going to eat into my 15 minutes, is it, of fame?
Yeah,
I mean, it's two degrees. I mean, I don't know you that well, so you're probably like, you're second degree off of Kurt. And I don't really know Kurt that well either. So Jerry Springer now is probably 3.5 degrees. I don't think that really counts.
Well, I mean, we have technically met, so you do know me. So he's true. Your second degree, I guess. Jerry is like, you're one person away from Jerry Springer now.
But it has to be 1 degree to eat into the 15 minutes of fame, though, right? I would have to know him.
Well, see, I wouldn't know. I have a lot of people who, because I've done a handful of television shows. If you watch that Food Network show, Mystery Diners, I'm a regular on that. And I've done a handful of other things and some movies, and I do these books. And people I went to school with, especially, they all seem to think that I'm famous. And I keep trying, one of the opening lines of the book I hope to have out next year, it starts off, it just says, contrary to popular belief, I am not famous. I am not even the least bit famous. But I'm the most famous, non-famous person in the world. Meaning, if you Google me, you type in Andy Martello in any web search on the planet, I am like a rash all over the internet. Because my website at one point used to get 500,000 hits a year. I don't know how I managed that, but it did. And I used to, you'll find tons of articles I've written and all my social media things and now the books. And so it's like, I'm very non-famous, but it's one of those things where I run into people all the time who think they know who I am, and that makes me even happier because I get the best conversations. I was at a bar one time. I want to say in Cincinnati, but I don't recall where it was. And the bartender, this beautiful, just gorgeous, large-breasted blonde bartender in a tank top. Funny, you never see that at a bar. And she's like, "Are you famous?" And I told her, I said, if you have to ask, then I'm probably not famous. And she goes, I'm telling you, you look famous. I'm like, well, I'm not. She goes, no, you really look famous. And I finally just said, yes, I am. I'm very.
You ever watched the Playboy famous. Channel?
Well, the funniest thing is she didn't even ask after I decided to just jokingly say, all right, yes, I am. I'm very famous.
I thought so.
Didn't follow it up with it. She goes, I thought so, and walks away.
I get that a lot myself. People think I'm famous, but they just think I'm Tom Arnold.
Oh, I get that a lot. People think I look like Tom Arnold or Mike Myers, which is strange. I'm like, how is it possible you missed the fact that I look like George Clooney? How did you miss that?
I get Garrison Keillor.
Oh, God.
A young Garrison Keillor.
Oh, well, as long as they put that justification in there.
What else do I get, Paul? A pen?
Yeah, pen.
Pen Gillette. I've gotten that.
Oh, that's
Kevin,
okay. So.
Kevin Bacon.
Oh, wait. Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, that's what it is. Willem Dafoe, not Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yes. You get the freaky Sydney, chicks after you. Yeah.
Sidney Poitier. You've been mistaken for Sidney Poitier a time
Sidney
or two.
Sidney Poitier, yeah. But, well, Andy, this has been delightful. Would you like to come back sometime? We'd love to have you.
Any old time. In fact, I'm going to be on the road for 10 weeks, starting September 3rd and ending I think November 30th with The Price is Right Live. And if you ever want to do this while I am out and about and on the road, by all means, give me a call. In fact, go to priceisrightlive.com and see if we're coming anywhere near you. I know I'm going to be... Louisville is going to be one of the shows, and then Anderson, Indiana, and somewhere in West Virginia that may or may not be close to that part of the world. I never know. But
I think it's fantastic that you would consider taking a break from surfing porn to talk to us.
Oh, well, see, that's the great thing is the porn doesn't go bad. It doesn't spoil. It's not like milk or anything.
And when it's on,
when it gets better with age.
Yeah, and when it's online, you can always get back to it. All I find in a dream, you know, that's all I need.
That's right.
I can
well, Andy, this has been fantastic. I think we're going to call, as long as I remembered to hit record, we're going to call our first official non-family threesome a success.
Oh, very good. As long as we're all sweaty and happy, that's all that matters to me.
That's right. Again, the website, andymartello.com. Is that
andymartello.com. Go to my Facebook. Like me on Facebook, Andy Martello Entertainment. Go to Amazon.com and get lots and lots of copies of King of Casinos or Pretty Words, and I'll be very happy.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, you go. What is it you were going to do? You were going to broil a lamb shank when you were talking to you.
I'm making a vegetable pasta. I'm making a zucchini pasta and sauce. So that's my big thing tonight. I don't think I could.
If I had tried to get it more wrong, I don't think I could have.
Yeah, it came close. Lamb shank, vegetable pasta, tomato, tomato. You know, same thing.
All right, well, go enjoy that. Send us a sample.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Don't Panic on RFI.
All right, so I went and saw a couple movies over the last couple weeks. Both of them with my kids. The first one I went with my youngest, my 7-year-old, and we saw a movie called Inside Out. It's in the high 90s on Rotten Tomatoes. So it is a very well-reviewed movie. And it's Disney, it's Pixar, it's animated, and the story is tight. I don't know if you've seen the previews.
Does Disney still own Pixar, or is Pixar now Pixar?
Well, they either own them, or Pixar now owns the castle that they put at the beginning of Disney movies.
Then Disney still owned that movie at the time, apparently. Because I'd heard that Pixar managed to be able to buy itself off from under Disney, which is why Incredibles 2 is coming out. But that's a podcast of a different color.
This movie is about the voices in your head, or what it is, it depicts your brain and your brain working as people in a control room. And several different emotions, you know, sadness, happiness, joy, anger. Anger is played by Lewis Black.
Of course.
Who,
by the way, never pass up an opportunity to see him live. If you get a chance, check him out. He's hysterical.
He's a pro, man.
Yeah, he is.
He's going places.
Well, one day we'll see his name in lights.
You remember that name, man.
That's right.
So, it's a little girl with her family. They move to a new town called San Francisco, California. And she gets all angst over it. And, of course, the people in her head running her brain get themselves into trouble. And it's one of those dual, sort of like the Fantastic Journey, like one of those dual stories where there's the shit that goes on inside the head, and then there's the shit that goes on with the actual girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the A plot and the B plot, and they're intertwined, and there's lots of funny ideas in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that thing that they do, and I can't figure out how they do it, which is funny shit for the adults while still not being confusing for the kids, and vice versa.
Right.
And they put those little jokes that only the adults will get, you know.
That is a page straight out of the Warner Brothers, you know, Looney Tunes playbook.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure if I went back and watched Bugs Bunny right now, I'd be like...
You would laugh at stuff. Like, for instance, there's scenes where, like, Elmer Fudd is, like, chasing Bugs Bunny through a house, and there's, like, nudie calendars on the wall.
Good.
You know, that just go by so fast. It's like, any adult, you know, especially in the 30s and 40s, any sexually oppressed adult is going to spot that right away.
So then the other movie we went to see was yesterday. We went and saw Minions.
Mm-hmm.
Which I saw Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2. Those were good.
Mm-hmm.
I liked them. Minions is good. I think this, you know, this marks the first one where they focus mainly on the Minions.
Hence the name.
Yeah. It gets in the low to mid 50s on Rotten Tomatoes. So the critics and users or viewers didn't much care for it. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was as good as Inside Out mm-hmm. or even like Frozen or, you know, the big, very popular ones. It was all right. I mean, they kept the action moving. There were a few confusing things. Probably the most confusing thing is the fucking language.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what they're saying.
Yeah. And if they don't do the job of conveying what they're saying by what they're doing, you will be kind of lost.
Oh, there is something in the news that we could talk about.
Okay.
Apparently there was a guy who dressed up as Batman and went and cheered kids up. Killed in a car accident.
Really?
Did you hear about that? You didn't hear about that?
No, not that I didn't hear about it. I saw it on Facebook today, but yeah. I thought it was the same stuff that he has done in the past, so I didn't click on it.
What do you mean the same stuff that he's done?
Is he the same guy that like got pulled over by the cops because they were all like, he comes out, he gets out of the car and he's Batman, and like five or six cops show up because it looks kind of like the same guy. The car is very similar. And, you know, he goes to hospitals and, like, cheers up, you know, cancer kids and things like that.
Well, he was killed in a car accident.
Well, that really sucks.
Ironically. I mean, he's Batman. Batman's supposed to be a good driver.
Yeah, but, you know, the other guy might not have been a good driver.
The guy, you mean the fake Batman?
No, whoever hit the fake Batman was clearly a bad driver because Batman's not a bad driver.
Would have been very ironic if it was like a fake Joker.
Or a clown car.
Yeah.
God, I can't believe we went there.
Where'd we go?
That's sad.
Hopefully, you know what? Here's why I didn't get... I agree it's sad, but it didn't strike me as sad when I first saw it because I guess I didn't know about the guy.
He looks like the same guy. And that's why I just assumed it was the same video I've seen like tons of times. So now I'm going to have to go back and like check it out because I'm curious. Well, hopefully, though, I mean, what this would do then is, you know, inspire more people to do stuff like this in honor of him, so A, you know, his contribution isn't lost on society, and B, it would multiply the positive good things that he's doing or did, as the case may be.
Well, I have the story, you know, right, like, here. Batman impersonator fatally struck by his own Batmobile.
Huh?
Lenny Robinson, a man who spent much of his recent years visiting sick kids in hospitals while dressed as Batman, died over the weekend when someone hit his Batmobile in Western Maryland. Lenny B. Robinson was driving eastbound on I-70 near Hagerstown when he experienced engine trouble and stopped partially in the fast lane. According to Maryland State Police, Robinson was checking the engine when a Toyota Camry hit his Batmobile, Robinson's custom black Lamborghini, which then struck him.
That's
Robinson,
him.
51,
That's
was pronounced
guy.
Dead at the scene. The driver of the Camry was not injured. Robinson's family members were devastated. He was my brother, my business partner, my best friend, Brother
and
Scott
Batman.
Robinson told the Washington Post. Touched a lot of lives and made a lot of kids smile. That's all he wanted to do. Robinson impersonated Batman for years, but became an even bigger celebrity in the region after police pulled him over while he was in costume
That's
and driving
guy.
His black Lamborghini back in 2012. The officers who stopped him wanted to talk about his Batman logo license plates, which aren't approved in the state. A video of the stop shows police officers eventually shaking his hand and taking pictures with him. Mm-hmm. The Washington Post reported in 2012 that Robinson spent more than $25,000 of his own money on Batman-related items every year, including toys, T-shirts, and books he gave away to kids.
That is him. That really sucks. Prayers
go out to his family and to all those kids who he touched. He'll be missed.
They need to turn on the fucking bat symbol for him. That's ridiculous. You know it exists. You know Hollywood's got dozens of them. My thing is this. One, hopefully, you know, that will inspire others to do, you know, things like that. And two, if I gotta go, I want to go in a Batman costume. You know,
by the Batmobile.
How are you gonna be remembered? You know, I was sitting at my desk and I had an embolism and I died. No, I was
having
I
a
was
really
a,
tough shit in.
I was in a Batman costume.
As a Batman costume.
That's how I want to go.
I hear you.
That's crazy. Well, God bless him.
Yeah, God bless him. And on that note. You know what I think we should do? We should toss it over to the Do It Indie Radio Hour guys and see if they can bring it back from the abyss that I took us into.
Yeah, you really brought it into a downward spiral.
Definitely. Well, I tell you what, MP Cavalier is probably adjusting his stingy brimmed hat at this moment. And Mrs. Cavalier is probably, you know, taking off her apron, folding it up neatly, setting it on the counter next to the muffins she just
the
baked.
The cookies are all baked.
Yeah, exactly. The kids' hair are combed. Wait, is it kids' hair? Kids' hairs.
It goes from plural to singular. So the kids' hair.
The kids' hair is all combed. She's applied a fresh coat of makeup, fixed her hair. Baked two pies.
What kind of pie?
Sometimes he's in the mood for apples. Sometimes he's in the mood for cherry. And the home smells of pie and fried chicken. And when MP walks through that door, there Tolan will be, you know, with his slippers and the paper.
And his pipe.
He'll invite him into this warm, cozy home.
This is going in bad places.
Welcome home, dear. How was your day? Kids will be like, hello, father. My homework is all done, so I can just sit here and light your pipe for you.
All right. Tolan's on half a dozen different medications and champagne.
He's on uppers, downers.
Sidewaysers.
Whiskey. Sidewaysers. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Seriously, all seriousness aside, the Do It Indie Radio Hour is next, and after that is Locals, Our Genre. Keep it right here on Radio Free Indie. Until next time, on behalf of Paul Schultz and Andy Martello, I'm Steve Vinson, reminding you that nothing you just heard was true.
And this one goes out to Lenny Robinson.
kill me! Don't kill me, man!
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.